Rob, we need to open with a fess.
Wife recently found a battered sausage and a load of chips in our garden. We spent most of the evening theorising its origin. But it was me. She came home early one day and she caught me mid-lunch. But we're on a diet and I panic launched it out of the window, intending to collect it later, but I forgot.
The best comment thing was, better call the superintendent to solve the crime.
Thank you, Seb Downey Blackwell, for that comment. Dave, do you secretly eat?
I think, like all parents, I secretly eat because your children mustn't know that you have infinite access to biscuits and chocolate and crisps.
I always thought it was that thing where you just sort of like hoover up all the food that they don't eat kind of thing. And then so you're having like two extra meals a day.
Oh, no, I make a point of doing that in martyr-like way. I cooked this and now I'm going to have to eat all of these vegetables.
Have you been doing that thing where like you buy nice chocolates, but you put them like somewhere they won't look, like under the tea bags or something?
Well, I mean, luckily he's not really looking out for things. And also, luckily, he has tons and tons of chocolate and things because he's an only child and an only grandchild and all sorts of things. So he basically just gets loaded up with chocolate and sweets, but we limit what he's allowed per day. And he's very kind of keen to budget it. But we do not budget what we eat quite the same way. We don't look after ourselves quite as carefully as we do him. So therefore, he's like, oh, yeah, I've got one more sweet thing I can eat today. And we're like, oh, yeah, I guess you better choose carefully, guy. And like, oh, no.
Oh, God. Now, he's still young enough to believe that your rules mean something. That's going to change.
Yeah, yeah, rapidly.
I really identified with that idea of like stuffing down all the chippy sausage and then having to hide it. Someone else was in the media recently talking about that. It was Richard Osman was talking about he's got like a problematic food addiction. And he was saying it's as bad as alcoholism, but fundamentally people laugh at you more for it.
Yes. I'm like an alcoholic, but for chocolate. We're not a chocoholic, but for alcohol, wasn't it?
That's yeah, that was classic. The Great Onion article, wasn't it? Yeah, yeah.
I found a whole bread roll in the garden, like completely intact. But what was weird about it was under a massive pile of leaves. I moved the pile of leaves aside and found a bread roll.
So what did you theorise had been happening there? Like, this is your partner hiding extra bits of carbs.
It's hibernating.
Yeah, yeah. For spending winter in the bath.
It was in the garden. There was a big pile of leaves and bark and things. And usually that means that a cat has done a shit in the garden. So I moved it aside to kind of just make sure there's nothing nasty to tread in. And there was a bread roll. And what I'm theorising is obviously a fox.
I always enjoy throwing bits of stale bread out into the garden in the hope that some animal will eat them. But it normally just means they rot and mulch out there. And my partner's like, why is this out there? Can you stop doing this, please?
Why is the garden so slimy?
But it's so satisfying. Like the way our windows work upstairs as well, like I've got a kitchen upstairs. You can just angle it right to throw like a lump of bread into the garden. And there's a little bit of skill because there's two gardens beneath because there's the neighbour's garden. You've got to get it right so you don't get into the neighbour's garden. And it's like, yes, done it right. The jeopardy of like, you know, if I start throwing food into the neighbour's garden, they're going to get pissed off.
It sounds like you're in love with the game, really, not the prize.
Yeah. It's just fun throwing things out the window, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
We used to, like, you know, when dickhead students would have, like, these terrible games like that. Like, one was, like, something like throwy, throwy, toss, toss or something. And what you had to do, we had a stairwell, you know, like 3-4 flights. And you put a glass at the bottom of the stair and you had a glass at the top of the stairs and you could put a bit of liquid in your mouth and you try to dribble it into the bottom of you try to get as much of the top glass into the bottom glass as possible, and then you could get an extra point if you could get the little red top of the tomato puree in there.
Oh God. This is Fessel. Cue the jingleist massive.
Welcome to the Fessel Podcast, where Rob Manuel and Dave Stevenson take this week's most awful confessions and cringe at the horror of it all. I'm Rob Manuel, and I've been running this Fessel account for 5 years.
And I'm David Stevenson, and I get dragged into Rob's projects regardless of whether I want to or not.
And we've been friends since 1980.
Regardless of whether I want to be or not.
Our producer tells us we need to encourage listeners to subscribe, rate and review wherever they get their podcasts.
Wherever.
The podcast I sort of like imagined earlier today. Can you guess what it was, Dave?
Was it this, but in reverse? So we make people forget specific details of their lives.
That would be a science fiction show, wouldn't it? I think it's like Total Unrecall or something. No, I was thinking about our, because we're at school together, and I was looking at that school photo of us from 1990, was it?
Good Lord.
The one where we're in the fifth year and we're standing together and there's like another 100 kids in that photo. And I was like, can't we just have a podcast where we go through them all one by one and bully them? No, I mean, we interview them and dig them out and see what's happened with their lives. You know, they're all now 49, 50, whatever. You just see where they are. And I'd find that interesting. And at least 100 other people would find it interesting.
Well, it's like a very specific version of 7-Up, isn't it? If you know that show.
I do. But broken by the fact that we'd only have 1 year. You start at age 50.
What will become of them?
They're all going to die. Ah. It's going to be very sad. They'll lose their teeth.
This was sparked by that weird thing of that one guy who had a very specific kind of phase of about 3 years where he was the most powerful person in the whole school through his tone of voice.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I know, yeah. Yeah, we were discussing a certain internet figure and whether his power was because he can recognise things and say them out loud.
We had someone at school who did the same thing and everyone lived in terror of him just remarking that you had new trousers. And you're like, oh, God, he's going to say it. Oh, God.
This kid was the most effective verbal bully I've ever met in my life. I mean, his particular genius, because you pointed out he would just sort of like say truthful things about clothes and it'd just be like nice trousers, whatever. But he would hammer it and he would hammer it. And what his particular, I think, weird, broken genius was that he knew that you were proud of your new trousers. So if he said new trousers in a slightly sarcastic voice, he would puncture your pride and he would do it in a way that would make you go, I am proud of my new trousers, but in his eyes, they're not cool. And I'm a sad person for thinking they're cool. And your whole life would crumble in your own head just from his pointing out you had new trousers on.
And he'd repeat it as well. And so you're like, I'm really sick of my new trousers now. I wish they'd go away. I wish I'd never worn trousers.
Anyway, we shouldn't literally mention his name, should we? We shouldn't.
No, because he might summon him.
He's on my Facebook. He mostly posts pictures of him outside football grounds at the moment.
He's a lovely man these days. He just had a very kind of weird phase in teenage years.
And what I loved about it was like you were saying that you don't even think he was aware of his power.
I genuinely don't think he was. I think if I knew that I was that powerful, I think I would try and grasp hold of it and keep it going. But he wasn't. He was perfectly pleasant. I ran into him a couple of years after that and he was nice. He was going to be an English teacher.
Because I remember, because he had that catchphrase, that's you, that is, before Newman and Badil. He was doing that whole routine of like pointing at like a dog shit or something. Okay, that's you, that is. You know, and it's like they nicked it off him.
I believe he made at least three teachers cry.
Go on.
There was obviously the woodwork teacher who he just said, nice brown suit, like a dozen times two, and he cried. There was something, I can't remember what he did to the geography teacher. He was sort of on a broken circuit going, please, 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 like just trying to cut it off, shut it down. And I think he made one of the French teachers cry as well, but I can't remember what her name was.
Oh, man. I know there was another lad who made the geography teacher cry by kissing her on the cheek. Which was, it's a sexual assault, isn't it? Yeah,
it is actually.
We've gone into dodgy territory. We're going to have to reverse this whole podcast and make it all about nice things, okay?
All right, bring on the nice stuff.
Bring on the nice stuff. This is the non-problematic content. This week, we're talking about the four confessions that most caught our eyes.
Just some confessions.
Confessions.
That caught our eyes. Just some confessions. The
Todd Eyes. Four confessions, four confessions for the lads.
Dave, notorious lad content Stevenson.
This we're loaded with content this week.
You should write for loaded, Dave. Right, okay, I'll do the confession. Sometimes my husband and I tell our kid that we're not feeling well and going to take a nap. He's all concerned and like, get well soon, but really we're in there having sex.
The scandal.
Right, I just wanted to bring that up because like the reason it just resonated with me because it just brought back this experience of being 10 years old and every Saturday afternoon, my parents would disappear off to the bedroom going, we're very tired. We need to have a rest. We're very tired. And I would hear them giggling in there and I'd often be banging on the door going, let me in, let me in. And I want to apologise to my, the ghosts of my parents for this behaviour and not understanding what was going on. And good for them for having an active sex life and all that stuff.
Oh, my God. Banging on the door is amazing.
Well, I felt left out. I didn't want to be involved because I didn't know what they were doing, but they were just doing stuff without me. And I wanted to be in there having not, you know what. Confession two. Had the perfect candidate turn up to interview for a position in our company last week, but I made the decision not to hire her based entirely on the fact she referred to the year 2013 as vintage. Get the fuck out of here.
That is incredible. 2013.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I work with someone who's born in 2001 and that is weird. And they're not young. They're not a young person.
They're not even young. They've got male pattern baldness.
Decrepit. I felt like my life was over at that point. I was very old in 2001. What's going on? Shit. I actually had this experience just earlier on when there was a thing about Norska Valley of the Four Winds. The 40th anniversary edition is out this year. And I was like, 40 years ago for this Studio Ghibli cartoon. That's impossible. 40 years ago, they were fighting World War II. I mentioned that to my wife. And, yeah, so.
And she said, you can come out of the bushes now, Dave. The war's over.
Yeah, you're still fighting World War II. Just a little shed.
The thing that made me feel old recently was my 15-year-old son insisting that email is dead and only for old people. No one of his generation is ever going to use it because they've grown up with messaging. And it's just, I was like trying to argue, well, you know, you don't always get to choose the technology you use to cooperate in the workplace. And you're going to be using email, sunshine. And he was like, no one young touches it. Awful.
You're going to be using smoke signals and carrier pigeons the way that the world's going on.
It's not like I've got any love for email either, but it might hang on.
I thought it was rubbish about 8 years ago, and now I'm back into thinking it's great again because, I don't know, we use Slack a lot of work and I get so many little pings and alerts that it's just too much. It's too much information.
Basically, every communication technology is shit because if it ever gets popular, it gets co-opted by people who want to use it to send marketing messages and bullshit, so... Email is great, except for the fact that now most of my email is sort of auto messages from websites, whatever you call it, you know?
Yeah, yeah, going, we miss you.
Yeah, I mean, there's a word for it. It's not spam, it's called fram, but no one ever took that phrase up.
Is it like the Wario to spams Mario?
Right, confession number three from the four that I want to talk about. This one's for you, Dave, it goes... Everyone in work calls me Dave, drives me insane. My name is David. I always introduce myself as David. My email signature is David. What nearly tipped me over the edge is when they bought me a personalised mug for my birthday with, yes, you've guessed it, Dave written all over it.
Now, as you know, Rob, I don't actually care,
you care
whether people call me Dave or David, but the only time I correct people is to make them feel bad. So if they call me one thing, I will gently correct them to say the other thing because I've got the option.
It's just troll face personified,
yeah,
aren't you?
It's sad in a way. Yeah, it's like when I was deputy editor at a previous project. And if anyone described me as deputy editor, I'd correct them to say I was assistant editor. But if they referred to me as assistant editor, I'd correct them to say I was deputy editor. That may have played into me getting fired. I don't care if it's Dave or David, but unless it's something that might market to me, in which case I put my name down as Mr. so that then all the email marketing comes in as, hey, Mr.
Your absolute willful trolling of it reminded me of my first ever attempt at building a internet bot. It just automatically searched for people using your and your apostrophe kind of thing, you know, you are version of your. It searched for both of them. And the account, I called it something like, the International Bureau for Correct English. And what it would do, just find accounts that said your, and then it would fav them. And then in the profile, it said, if this account has favved your account, then you've used your incorrectly. And it had no logic in it to know whether it was correct or incorrect. And it just built up angry people. And I had it live for about a day or 2 days. And then it found about 80 angry people. And I thought, I better take this down because I'm adding unpleasantness into the world.
This is true. It's back in the days when you're like, oh, I didn't quite realise just what a cauldron of unpleasantness the whole thing is. Whoa, what happened if I poured this into the potion? Yeah. Fast home.
Number four. I went on a date recently and went back to his after a fun night. He offered to put something on whilst we relaxed and proceeded to watch a Scottish man in his 50s play games on Twitch. Needless to say, I went home.
I should hope he did.
Do you know why I'm bringing this one up, Dave?
I do know why, yes. Because of...
Because of a man called Daft Limmy, or that's his internet username, Brian Limond. Is that his, also his real name? He's a comedian. He's a very well-known comedian, Scottish Glasgow comedian. And it, this one, I put it live sort of like knowing it's probably someone having a little joke at his expense or playing with him or something. Is it true? I don't know. Or is it just someone having a little joke? And I was like, poor old Limmy, he got this one added to him about 180 times. People going, oh, it's Limmy, Limmy. And then I think maybe to stop people adding at him, to recognise that he had seen it, he quote tweeted it with a single, solitary, sad thumbs up. So I want to use this moment to apologise to this man who I have no beef with and who basically frightens me because he's got an army of very frightening fans.
I was actually going to say you accidentally created the International Bureau of Correcting Limmy. Just sort of specifically wind up Limmy.
I don't want to wind up Limmy. He's like the last person. You just think he could just break you with like one comment, one of his Twitch things, and just says no. He's just like, no. He would just sort of shake his head about your entire existence and suddenly you would blink out of existence in shame, I think.
Sorry, Limmy.
Sorry, Limmy.
I had nothing to do with it.
And then I did send him a message saying, do you want to go on a podcast and tumbleweed?
That's it. He's blinked you out of existence with shame now. That's how he does it.
Yeah, but, you know, he's a good lad. Even no, he is a good lad. He is a good lad. Even if he's turned the weans against us. Yeah. Are you ready for the next section, David Stevenson?
I'm more than ready. It just made us laugh. Fess home. Fess home.
It just made us laugh. Ha-ha. Fess home. This section's called Just Ones That Make Us Laugh. And we've got four of them. Are you ready, Mr. Stevenson, to be the sounding board for this internet content?
Like a block of wood.
Like a block of cheese that just has to melt if it enjoys stuff. Right. When our friends got married in Thailand, my girlfriend was so sure we were invited, she booked flights and a hotel. Turned out it was immediate family only, so we spent 4 days hiding from them on the resort until they left. And to my knowledge, they still have no idea we were there.
Jesus Christ.
Could you sort of see yourself doing that, hiding in a hotel?
I couldn't see myself doing it, but when we at our wedding, there were at least two guests who were not invited to the ceremony who turned up at the venue. Ooh. Around the neighbourhood. But obviously there was a reception nearby, so maybe they just turned up 4 hours early for no apparent reason. But yeah, we saw them and chose not to make it awkward by bringing it up.
So they did come into the main wedding.
They didn't get into the building,
yeah.
But as you know, we got married at the zoo.
Yeah,
they might have just been visiting the zoo for a nice day in their formal gear. It was a strange thing.
Yeah, I suppose it's easy to get the wrong end of the stick, isn't it? You know. And I'm sorry I was there for 4 hours without you wanting
yeah.
me there.
On the other hand, you were there too long, yeah.
Yeah, I remember your complaint about my behaviour on your wedding, which was that you asked me to do a reading. And I was so like, I can't fuck this up. I sort of enunciated every word slowly. And you were like, Jesus, get on with it. This is terrible.
I didn't heckle you, to be fair. Not on my own wedding.
You heckled me afterwards, saying that I'd spent too long on it. Yeah, yeah.
I think heckling afterwards is called a review.
I gave me notes. You came to my wedding, didn't you?
Yes, I did, yeah.
Yeah, that went well. My main memory of my own wedding is that, okay, because you came, didn't you? And do you remember that guy who invented the word metrosexuality came?
I do. And I was thinking, what word can I invent to match up to that?
I know. And he spent the whole of my wedding sort of reception complaining that some other person had been using his word metrosexual without his permission or something.
I think, to be honest, that might be partly my fault because I didn't know what else to talk to him about because that's the only thing I knew about him. So I was like, right. So tell me about metrosexuality. How's the whole concept going? He was very cross.
I think that was it. Some other dude had invented this kind of thing called retrosexuality. And he was like, but I invented metrosexuality. You can't just take my thing and change it a bit and then say it's your own thing. But there's this whole media opportunities for if you just invent a word and then pimp yourself around.
Neologism printer goes brrr.
Is that still a thing? Can you do that? Can you invent a word and get yourself gigs?
It very much is a thing, obviously, yes. In features of magazines and things.
Oh, wow.
They're always trying to do it.
This is where we insert some great content about us inventing words that we haven't prepared, isn't it?
I'm going to invent a word. I can't think of any words, not even normal words now.
Blimp.
Blimp. I think blimp's been invented.
Oh, shit. But I can make it mean something else. Right, ones that just make me laugh. Okay, number two. I once had a shag with a guy on Tinder. In the middle of it, his girlfriend rang. I ended it there and then. He ordered me up an Uber to my house, which cost £10 for the ride, but I carried on to Manchester to meet some mates, and it cost him 63 quid.
I think we need to know the locations, really, to know whether that's true or not.
Well, the doubters on this one were saying, because, like, I really... If this turns into a bad episode of Would I Lie to You, you know, we have to guess the whether it's true or not. The doubters, how they were doubting it was like, apparently when you do get an Uber, you can't change the end location unless it's your personal app kind of thing. And so that's where people are going chinny reckon on that one. But I liked the idea. I liked the idea of a little bit of payback, literal payback, and then getting to hang out with their mates in Manchester.
Maybe they only used Uber as a generic term, meaning a taxi.
Ones that just made us laugh. Proudest moment in my entire life. Laid in bed late at night. I farted so loudly that my dog downstairs started barking, which set off next door's dog, which set off the one across the street, rippling out dog to dog across the whole estate, lasting for about 15 minutes. I'm 47.
Eight's just a number, baby. That's incredible.
Do you want to do some barking content?
What?
Well, I could do the fart.
Woof, woof, woof.
Woof, woof. I was thinking we could, like, bark at each other like that recording of John and Yoko where they're going, John! Yoko. 15 minutes of experimental bark content.
I wonder if this was a thing in caveman times where a cave person would fart really loudly and a wolf would take it up and then wolves howling across the tundra.
It definitely was, yeah. It sort of lives on. I remember, like, being in some crappy... festival gig that always, if you're ever at a festival and sleeping in a tent at, you know, music festival, someone's going to shout bollocks, and then it's going to, someone else in the next tent will do it, and it will go across the entire festival. Well, it did in 1996, the last time I could be bothered to go to a music festival. Anyway, I'm sure they're still doing it. People are still twats.
I'm going to ask a question here that is, I don't necessarily know if I want to know the answer, but what makes some farts loud and some farts not loud? Because it's not the force.
Well, you've got your butt cheeks, and I suppose, I mean, if you open your bum a bit, open your cheeks and let the fart out, it's quieter because it's not going between the wobbling butt cheeks.
I guess so. I feel like there's more to it than that, like a fine musical instrument, but I don't know that I want to necessarily actually know that. I'll learn too much if I want to find out even a little bit more.
One of the things that people regularly submit, I don't think I've ever published, is along the lines of people saying they've shaved their butthole and it's changed the timbre of their fart.
Has it made it higher or lower or...?
Actually, I don't know.
I feel like an H.P. Lovecraft protagonist just on the edge of sanity.
This is a comment you can add to anything, isn't it, Dave? You're always saying that.
You know me.
Right, number four in the ones that just made me laugh. Caught short on a woodland walk, I ducked behind some bushes to take a dump. When I was doing up my trousers, a dog wandered over to me, so I hurried away. Then I heard the dog's owner. Jesus wept, Dexter, that's a big one. I think she picked up my shit in a bag.
God.
Jesus Christ, Fenton!
It is
Fenton!
Very much, isn't it?
Stop eating that man's shit!
Find people are channeling that dog owner now with their dogs today.
Right. Are you done on dog shitting?
No one's picked up my shit in a bag. That's all I can say. I haven't got an anecdote to contribute here.
Well, I can delve into my own memories of reading 250,000 confessions. And a very common one to come in is people saying that they just rustle around some leaves when picking up their dog shit and don't pick up the dog shit. And those people are scum. That's what I say about that. Pick up your dog shit. Although one I did earlier, because I've got two dogs, I wasn't paying attention when the dog went for a shit and it was really muddy and I couldn't tell exactly where the shit was. And I looked in the area and I picked up a shit and put it in a bag, but I'm not sure it was the dog's, but I figured on the balance of like good and bad in the world, I've picked up a shit, even if it's not my dog shit.
It's shit karma, isn't it?
Yeah.
The balance of the universes.
Yeah. And there's been the odd time when sometimes like the dog will go into like some bushes and you're just kicking around there for 5 minutes. You can't find the fucking shit. And you just go, wow. Let's move
on. You should send a child in there because I'll tread in it, no problem.
Send a child licking and see and test them for the toxin, whatever it's called.
Highest rated vessels.
Right, this section is called Highest Rated Confessions on Fesshole this week. Right, the highest rated this week at 16,000 fingers have hammered the like button on this one. And it goes...
Can you do it in an offensive Scottish accent?
I'll just do it in my ordinary voice. Me and my mate are Scots.
We're visiting... Scots. Hello. Would you like me to do it?
Okay, fine. You do it, yeah.
Me and my mate are Scots. Me and my mate are Scots. We were visiting England and got arrested for being drunk and disorderly. The English cops really believed our names, quote, in Scottish accent, were Ben Doon and Phil McCavity. We were only rumbled when the Scottish desk sergeant at the station burst out laughing.
Highest rated. Well, that was the third highest rated anyway. Swiftly moving on. Second highest rated this week, 21,000 fabs. When my parents died, I inherited their house that I now rent through an agency. I live opposite and the tenants don't know that I own the property. One day he came over and asked if I could look after his dogs whilst the agency inspected the house because they don't allow pets.
Oh.
Ooh, that's like one we need more story on, isn't it? Maybe that's where my people fabbed.
I think we need to know why people are fabbing that one, to be honest with you.
They just fabbed it in their droves. They couldn't stop it.
Good for the landlords.
There was an advert, right, for Grind Coffee I saw on the tube, and it said, "Our pods disappear faster than your landlord when the mice move in." And I just thought it was such a fundamentally depressing ad that it was assuming that that everyone's stuck in this rental situation and that your landlord is terrible. It was just a sort of...
Is it a horrifying image that your landlord dissolves screaming when the mice come?
Right, and the highest rated... Are you ready for the highest rated this week?
Yes. No. Yes.
No. Okay, well, wait. We'll wait until you're ready.
I'm ready now. I'm ready.
Okay. At 24,000 fabs, that's the highest rated one this week. At school in the 1970s, I decided to look cool wearing a long sand-coloured trench coat. I wore it for one day. I've been called Columbo now for 50 years.
That's probably gone in and out of being a good thing, right?
I just had terror reading that out of going, oh my God, did I read that one out last week or something? Then it was like, no, I stuck it in the beta newsletter.
Ah. Just
endlessly processing content into a mulch of other content.
Yeah, it's one of those things, isn't it, when you try your first kind of attempting to look cool.
Oh. I'm ready for you to tell me about looking cool, yeah.
To try to start looking cool now. I have never managed it. I have got a trench coat, actually, and it is... I've tried wearing it, and you just feel like a twat, don't you? Like, it's just too dramatic.
Yeah, the coat I only wore once was, like, I was in charity shop, and my ex goes, you should get that coat. And it was basically one of those camel hair coats that Arthur Daly wears.
I would like that coat.
And she was like, oh, you look great in that. And I sort of like bought it. Well, I bought it and wore it once and I felt such a prick. And then it was a bit filthy as well because it's from a charity shop. So I took it to a dry cleaners and I left it in the dry cleaners and never picked it up.
Oh, well, they got something out of it, didn't they?
Anonopin. 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 Anana, 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 bin.
And now it's the Anonymous Opinion Bonus Round, as it's officially called. So the point of this bit is, like, we've got a sister account to Fesshole called Anonopin, where people submit opinions and we post out some if we think they're sort of interesting to talk about. And it's not a list of things I personally agree with. It's just, is it worth having a row about? And or is it funny? Is the kind of criteria. Anyway, I've got five opinions for you. Number one, the best rapping ever done by a white man was Neil Tennant on Western Girls. I mean, it sounds ridiculous, doesn't it? But I'm sort of like, you know what? It is pretty good, isn't it?
I'll be honest, I can't quite remember how it goes, Rob. Could you remind me?
Think about there being a madman around or something.
Call the police, there's a madman around. Yeah. Going down underground to a dive bar in a West End town.
I've made you do it by not doing it myself.
Yeah, well, I thought it was unfair to try and get you to do it without... I mean, if it's White Man, yeah, but obviously Debbie Harry on Rapture is still there.
That was fucking terrible. What was it, like cars eating bars on the planet Mars or something?
Yeah, yeah, and he shoots you dead and he eats your head. Now you're in The Man from Mars. You're out at night eating cars.
Well, I just found it interesting. I mean, it was someone taking the piss a bit, but at the same time, it is genuinely good. But there was people in the replies actually going, is it rap or is it just talking? And it's like, no, it's literally a rap. It's really rhythmic. And I dug into it, and Neil Tennant talks about how he wrote a rap and then he was a bit embarrassed to perform at the rap, you know, because it was like the first thing they ever did in a professional recording studio. And it's like, people go, no, it's good, Neil. It's good rap, Neil. It's all right. And now he's a proud man, did his rap,
yeah,
became famous.
At least he did it in his own voice and didn't try to do a cooler rap voice.
That was, again, a conscious decision that he made. He was like, he thought, well, there hasn't been really English rap. I'm going to use my English voice. But he didn't use his Newcastle voice because he would have then become Gazza doing Fog on the Tie.
What year was that? Just out of interest.
Probably about 86, I'd have thought, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Or maybe 85, might be something like that, yeah. Opinion number two. If the water is hot enough and you wash up straight away, washing up liquid is generally unnecessary.
I agree.
You agree. You've just got filthy plates that you haven't used detergent on, Dave.
Quite honestly, I think if you leave them to soak for 2 days, then everything just gets soft and it comes off easy.
My tip is that all pans should be cleaned by not scrubbing, because that often damages the surface, but you should deglaze pans. You should put your pan on, pour a centimetre of water in, heat it up to boil, simmer, give it a soft little stroke with a spatula. All the cooked on grease comes off and you don't ever need to use detergent in that context.
In your notes, you mentioned that it makes a
weird soup you can give to the dog.
I think that's a bonus.
Yeah, my partner's like gets a bit annoyed sometimes that I'll make these weird soups to the dogs because you make the dog shit everywhere.
Ah.
It is definitely the way to deal with pans that are, what you call them, iron skillets, which you aren't meant to use detergent on. And you get all that bollocks about people saying, oh, you know, you've got to build up your crust. That's where the flavour comes from. And like, that's just horrific. So you want to clean your pan properly, but you can clean your pan and not destroy the sort of the golden kind of oil layer, whatever you call that, the seasoning, by deglazing your pan. More tips for sorting out your pans next week. Opinion number three. Can we draw a veil on badly drawn depictions of Paddington Bear escorting an ill or recently deceased personality of any standing? It only made sense once.
Once?
Well, it specifically made sense once in the context of the Queen dying. And then about a year before she died, she made that bit of sort of like shareable content of her hanging out at Paddington. And so then Paddington was like, drew her off to the spirit realm, didn't he?
She did a lot of things a year before she died. Quite honestly, didn't have to be Paddington.
Well, it was Paddington. We saw it. But you didn't see any of that shit shared.
Oh, yeah, of course I did, yeah.
But now it's become like every time a sort of old celebrity dies, they are the grim reaper of Paddington death holds their hand into heaven's gates. There's always someone doing some version of that now.
I like it. And our prehistoric ancestors worshipped the bear as the kind of guardian of a kind of spiritual realm. I think we're going back to those days.
I do think it is a thing where we're accidentally seeing in real time the birth of a new folk religion. And it's exactly the same processes that created all of the great religions, or specifically the Christian religion, because I can't comment on any others.
I'd rather not comment on any others, yeah. Just to avoid really sticking my foot in it. It is interesting. Maybe there's like a little gap in the spiritual market for the Paddington's fulfilling for us now, like the kind of the atheist's ferryman.
There is always this kind of like folky kind of religious stuff bubbling up in our society. That whole thing of, you know, in Robbie Williams' lyrics, I'm loving angels instead, you know, and it's like angels in that context of the song meant the soul of the dead child kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
It was a song about stillbirth and all that kind of stuff, you know, and that whole thing of you get people who go, they think like a white feather or something appearing in their house is like a dead person reaching out to contact them and stuff.
My duvet is broken.
The ghost of my dead duvet wandering around wearing white sheets again.
Yes, I was going to say exactly that, yeah.
But yeah, we need to compile a big list of all the kind of like pseudo-religious stuff that's been thought up by the British public and then put it in a big book, call it the Bible Mark II, and quids in, we'll be rich. Right, opinion number four. Why does the Billy Joel song Piano Man have an awful amount of harmonica in it? Like, that's the instrument front and centre. It always bugs me. Are you aware that it's got a big honking great harmonica? He tootles away on the piano and then it does like four bars of that and then it goes in with like a Bob Dylan kind of noise. And it's the Bob Dylan noise because it's like the harmonica when it's sort of resting on a mouth kind of thing around your neck.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You've only got that wheezing in and out Darth Vader noise and none of the subtle control of blues notes that you'd expect in fine harmonica playing. But it bugs this man. But I think fundamentally, Billy Joel is a funny man and he just found it funny to go, here's my song, Piano Man, honk, 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 honk on the harmonica. He's just rolling out the gags.
I think you're probably right. He is quite funny.
He is funny. Yeah, yeah. It's worth, that's my recommendation to anyone. Stop the podcast, go and look at Billy Joel clips on YouTube, him being interviewed. He's a funny man.
And then like, rate and review this podcast as very, very highly for recommending that.
And then petition Billy Joel to start a podcast where he gets to hang out with all his old showbiz mates and tell funny stories. Opinion number five. The art of stand-up comedy is dying, gradually being replaced with internet arseholes meeting their fans. Just tumbleweed for this one.
The cold silence.
The cold silence of, like, just vague recognition. I mean, it's sort of like, it is true now. If you go to venues, there's, like, endless arseholes who've just done things like created, like, a notorious Twitter account and then they're, like, asking people to turn up and pay tickets. It's ridiculous.
Well, without like wanting to sort of diminish that, there is the thing that stand-up comedians are desperate to have a shtick to get on stage with, and one of them might be creating a Twitter account, so then you get your stage time.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I tell my honest opinion. My honest opinion is if an audience is enjoying themselves, then it's valid kind of thing. And if an audience isn't enjoying themselves, then it's doubly valid. Because you've got to punish audiences with weak content. No, but there is this sort of like very narrow definition of stand-up comedy that was sort of developed in, not wrongly, but developed under, what's his name now? The American...
Thatcher.
Thatcher. The American stand-up comedian Thatcher in the 60s.
Lenny Bruce?
Yeah, Lenny Bruce. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that sort of defined what stand-up comedy could be. And it's not that it's bad. It's actually very good. But... if someone wants to just go on stage and pull flowers out of their arse while people cheer, that's also good. It's just whatever works.
Whatever's entertaining people, basically, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I quite agree.
My brother once worked as the booking some comedians kind of thing for an end of show thing at a university, and he books that Jerry Sadovich.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah, dodgy old Sadovich. He said he finished the show by turning round, dropping his trousers, putting a firework up his arse, lighting it going bang and saying, this one's for the Vice Chancellor. It's quite a way to end the show, really.
The aristocrats.
Anyway, I've got a new section for you, Dave.
Go on then.
This section's called Fess Hole Rejected.
It's the fess they reject that makes John West Fess the best.
Absolutely. Okay, because like what I have to do every day, I have to wake up in the morning. I'm sick of waking up. I just want to have the eternal silence of sleep. But somehow I have to fucking wake up every day and read approximately 200 to 300 confessions from the great British public and select 16 of them to go live. And so I thought as a bit of a diversion, I would mention some of the ones that I didn't put live. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You ready for this? I've got three I didn't stick live.
Braced.
Okay. Number one, it went, not my confession, but his. My pa is friendly with the king and queen. After His Majesty's cancer diagnosis, he went to church with him in Norfolk. Afterwards, when we arrived back at the house, I showed him a fess. Turns out His Majesty is a regular reader. And like, I read that going, well, I'm not going to stick it live because it's just so self-gratifying, what the word is, self-serving. But also, it's probably bollocks. But then I thought maybe it isn't bollocks, because I was trying to work out if anyone famous followed this account, because I was thinking, you know, if there's anyone famous following the account, we could slide into their DMs and ask them to be a guest to try and get anyone to listen to this part of this wonderful podcast. And I noticed that Tom Parker Bowles, the stepson of our king, does follow Fesshole. So it would seem conceivable that like they'd be having like a royal dinner with his stepson, and it's like, you know, something to talk about. Go, I've got this on my phone. And like, there's King Charles enjoying Fesshole. Could be true.
Tom Parker Bowles chortling away at the fesses at a big royal funeral. What was on Kwasi Kwarteng's phone when he was doing all that stuff? Do you remember all that?
Yeah. On Kwasi Kwarteng's phone, he was reading Fesshole, and he was specifically reading one that said, "I always say sausages in the manner of the talking dog from That's Life. Now my kids do it too, but they've never asked where it comes from, and I've never told them." And Kwasi Kwarteng was reading that and chortling away. In fact, he was like going, "I fucking submitted that," said Kwasi Kwarteng, "and they've actually published it. My life is brilliant. It's going so well."
I see nothing bad happening to me in the next few weeks.
Okay. Second one I didn't publish this week. It just said, "I'm a father of three, but I love having anal sex with my wife." It's just these two disconnected clauses, this "but." "I'm a father of three, but I love having anal sex with my wife." How are these things connected? Can you follow that?
Maybe he misunderstands where babies come from. Maybe he loves anal so much he can't resist saying "but."
It does come in a few times, like variations of things where people going, "My husband wants to take me up the bum. I'm worried he's gay." And it's like, he's not gay if he's trying to have sex with you. He might be wanting to have sex with you in a way you find unpleasant and you want to say no to, and that's also fine. But it's inherently not a gay act because it involves a man and a lady. Anyway, the third one I rejected this week for a number of reasons. Basically, this one is saying they don't understand why men would go to a cubicle than a urinal. And I rejected it because there's been so much piss content. I'm just drowning in urine. And secondly, it was not a confession. It's a question. So can you answer the question, why do men sometimes choose to use a cubicle instead of a urinal?
Because you fall off the urinal when you're looking at your phone. Very obvious.
Very good, Dave. Very good. Obviously, the answer is like some men suffer from a sort of pee shyness where they get their old John West out and then they feel other men are looking and they just go, "Oh, I can't. I'm too tense to pee. But I've got a solution for you. I hope I can remember it, because I have at times suffered from a bit of piss shyness. Mm-hmm. And I found that if I stared, because it's invariably you're in some public loo, and it'll be tiling on the walls, and so it's got grout, and you can stare at the grout. I would just try and stare at that grout and think about the grout. And then sometimes, I don't know if I can remember the song now, I'll do a little bit of a song to help me sometimes. And I wish I had this in my notes so I could read it out, but it was like, "Grout, grout, stare at the grout. This is the piss that I want to let out. Come on, it's not even a poo," or something like that. And it's like the final line is awkward, and that also helps me because I try and make the lyrics better, and that distracts me and I can pee then.
I think the advice that I had that was quite good, I think I got it from you, which is that imagine you're pissing on the shoes of the man next to you.
Was that really my advice? Wow. I was quite bold in my advice when I was younger.
The other advice is to loudly say, "Tea, Earl Grey, hot."
I don't understand men who are confident bold pissers in that situation. You know, I've got a strategy so I can cope with it, but just men that are just kind of like right in there, and then like, oh, it's awful when you're like working somewhere and then people want to engage you with a whole conversation at the urinal. It's like, oh God, mate.
That is a different thing when it's like people just turn around and go, "Oh, how are you doing, mate? You all right? What are you up to?" You can see what I'm up to. As far as I'm concerned, we cease to have bodies when we go into the toilets, and then we only re-materialise when we're out.
I think there should be a no-talking rule in public loos.
Like a church.
Like a church, yeah. We can pray to the God of just letting the wee out.
It's the best. Do-be-do-be. Come as a fesshole. Come as a fesshole. These the best. Doobie doobie. Camus affairs. Oh, look, Camus affairs.
Right, are you ready for best comments?
I'm ready.
Okay, so there are confessions that go up, and then we've looked at the best comments. So I'll read the confession, and Dave, you can have the comment. Are you ready? Yeah.
Thank you, yes.
Had a hair transplant in 2012 before I met my now wife, who doesn't know. It's starting to thin out again, so I decided, how can I disappear for 8 weeks to get it done again and her be none the wiser?
If she finds out, there'll be hell to pay. That's from Ed.
It's particularly funny you just saying Ed because it's obviously our ex-colleague, Ed.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. It's just old Ed. Right. My missus uses AA batteries like it's going out of fashion. I have my own secret stash for my Xbox controller.
Who's going to tell him? Victoria.
Thank you, Victoria.
Tell him. She's a robot.
I hate best comments. Okay. No luck with the ladies. In my 30s, I got into a gay relationship to split the bills and some company. I took a year to stop thinking about women whilst doing the deed. Going to be 3 years now and I've got no regrets. I'm still a closeted heterosexual though.
And the comment here is, with women not doing the biz, my life just needed some fizz. A bit of a shock, swapped fanny for cock. Took 12 months to get used to the jizz. That's from Limpin' Jack Flash. Thank you to that person.
Thank you to the next poet laureate of Great Britain and Northern Ireland.
Do you remember, like, there's a phase of, like, people writing humorous limericks in response to stuff? My mum used to do it all the time.
Yeah.
Like, write them into the Daily Mail and stuff.
Yeah. Can you remember any of your mum's poetry?
No, I really can't. Or her letters to the Chancellor or any of that stuff.
Yeah, the people writing humorous poetry in response to events is it lives on in the Facebook kind of world of, like, remember socks for jumpers? Remember when we could go out and all that kind of horrible stuff?
Actually, I have seen a couple of people in the newspaper comment sections doing it as well, and they are old people.
Do you think we could get a novelty Christmas book out of, like, terrible poems left in the reply section of the Telegraph to major news events?
I think you couldn't really, no.
Okay. Right, the last one from Best Comments is, oh God, there's such a... We're rolling in the muck with this content. And it's like, I wanted to run a clean podcast for, like, responsible, upstanding citizens, and we've been dragged into this filth. Anyway, here it is. Became obsessed with wanting anal sex. Wife refused it. I found it with a work colleague. Hated it. My wife found out, she left me. Sometimes fantasies should remain as such.
Your marriage and your work life, mate. You've wrecked them both.
Thank you, Ulster Bolster, for that.
God.
Our producer tells us we need to encourage listeners to subscribe, rate and review wherever they get their podcasts. Dave, can you tell them this?
Our producer tells us we need to encourage listeners to subscribe, rate and review wherever they get their podcasts.
And now to finish on a nice note, Fesshole isn't just horror. It can also...
Damn it.
You can't do a Midlands accent whilst smiling. That's the thing. Okay, Dave, you read this one.
Fesshole isn't just horror, it can be just men being absolute dickheads who have to commit to their own uselessness. Off work, I was due to pick kids up from nursery. I fell asleep and didn't hear calls, so wife got called and rushed home from work to get them. She came in furious, so I had to pretend I was unconscious. Ended up having days of tests to see what was wrong, just to avoid a bollocking.
It's sort of relatable, that one, you know, committing to the lie that you've told in the moment, and they go, oh God.
I've been a whisker away from being that person, yeah. Just not quite. That moment where you're like, I could just pretend that I really hurt myself.
Yeah, I did it once and was half an hour late picking up my eldest from nursery. And I was completely and rightly shamed by the nursery, and I never did it again.
I did it one time, but I realised as I needed to be there. So what I did was I rang up the parents of all of his friends, and they were collecting their kids. So I got them to collect him and have a play date. And he thought it was a really nice treat that I'd arranged for him. And I got, like, I did really well out of it. So that was actually really nice.
I thought you were going to phone in a bomb threat for some reason.
That's so like me, yes.
Every time there's been a problem I've had working with you, it's a mysterious...
It's the bomb threats that do it.
This Irish man on the phone.
Wow.
Claiming that's a bomb. A
very unconvincing Irish accent.
It's the only time I've been racially abused in my life is by someone... Because you can't really racially abuse me, a white man, but the closest I've got to it was like someone going... I was in a Wetherspoons pub and there was a guy next to me in the bar and he was an old gent, probably 70 years old. And I wasn't paying him much attention and I got the barman to get... And I realised that I pushed in basically in front of this guy. And so I said, oh, sorry, mate. Actually, you go first. No problem. You go first. You know, but I realised what I'd done. And he went, it's typical. And I was like, sorry. He said, it's typical of your lot. And I was like, sorry, my lot? Yeah, the Irish. It was like the closest thing in my life of white privilege to getting minor abuse. So, yeah, on that fantastic bombshell...
Good Lord.
Good Lord. Yeah, they've got a coming up gig in Dublin, I think. Yeah. Nice one. That was a party political broadcast on behalf of Nick Clegg and the Liberal Democrats.